The newest book from V, formerly Eve Ensler, is Reckoning, and it invites us to travel the journey of a writer's and activist's life and process over 40 years, representing both the core of ideas that have become global movements and the methods through which V survived abuse and self-hatred. V is a Tony Award-winning playwright and best-selling author for The Vagina Monologues. Again, the new book is Reckoning, and we welcome V back to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm thrilled to be here.
We spoke when this book first came out in hardcover, and I'm interested in what it has been like over the past year plus of talking about it and of communicating with people about the story that you're telling in the book.
Wow, that's such a great question. No one ever asks things like that because, you know, books come out and they kind of disappear into the ethers, you know. I think what's really been amazing is to see how the theme of reckoning absolutely resonates with people in various ways. It's almost like it can be adapted to whatever people are going through. Like, for example, I was in the Balkans on part of the tour in November, and a lot of what people were reckoning with was the Kosovo war, the war in Bosnia, how that's impacted the culture, what are the remains of it, what do people have to do to transform whatever's been left of that, and whatever injustice, what's the alchemy of that transformation and reckoning? And I think that's pretty much been true everywhere I've gone. Everyone seems to be in a process of reckoning with pasts that haven't been dealt with, particularly in this country. And I think, as I talk about in the book, you know, I wrote this during COVID, which was a period for those of us who were fortunate enough to be locked in our homes and not on the front lines, was a period of deep self-reflection and deep reckoning personally, but also politically, in reckoning with the fact that we didn't have a healthcare system that was supporting the majority of people, particularly brown and black people. We didn't have a healthcare system that was supporting the healthcare workers. And then at the same time, we were seeing the George Floyd moment, that horrific moment with the, you know, the cop's knee on his neck for 9 minutes, and the explosion, that the reckoning that began to happen in that time, of looking at police violence towards black people in this country and the kind of uprising that it was occurring around that. And I think there are so many ways that we need to reckon with the past, because we are seeing so much of it being repeated now. I mean, all we have to look towards is the rise in white supremacy, for example, that we're seeing everywhere, in knowing that we haven't reckoned with our past in a way that has fully alchemized and transformed that trauma.
Let us just go to a simple definition. I think I spoke to you about this the last time, but of how you define reckoning and what our role is in that.
Well, I think reckoning is a remembering. It's an accounting. It's a taking responsibility for. It's coming to terms with through a transformation of the past, right? It's taking responsibility, a deep, deep responsibility. And I think for me, at any rate, like, it really began, if I look at it, with my last book, The Apology, which I wrote because I had waited my whole life for my father to apologize to me for sexually abusing me and for physically abusing me, and that never happened. So I wrote his apology to me in his voice to help free myself from living inside his narrative. And I think that really began to show me the power of reckoning, the power of apology, the power of taking responsibility from the past, because I think so many conflicts in the world are hinged on an unreckoned with or an unresolved or a path that hasn't been faced or dealt with.
When you think about it, and as you explore in the book, I mean, we all have those moments, right? And we have, it's sort of, I don't know how to, many ways to put it, but I guess one way to put it is sort of, you pick your fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
You decide,
yeah.
You decide what has the most meaning and what you need to reckon with.
Definitely. But like, I'll give you an example. I was just in the Congo where I've been doing work for the last 12 years, right? Right now, the war, which has never really ended, it sort of goes through lulls, right? But the war is an economic war that is fought for the minerals of the Congo, where outside multinational companies hire militias to go in and destroy the communities that are near the mines. They rape, you know, women in those communities. They force husbands to rape their daughters. The militias rape young women. They force people to flee and they take over those mines, right?
Right.
Okay. Because there's been complete impunity, because there's been no dealing with the fact that it is an economic war, it is a war that is taking minerals that belong to the people of Congo away from them, right? Because it's based on a history of colonialism and a history of imperialism and racism, because it's never been reckoned with. It continues and it goes on and on and on and on. And I think one of the things we see, you know, is when people do reckon, when people do say, I have done this, this is wrong, I'm looking at the depth of it, I'm looking at my role of it, and they take responsibility for it and they apologize, things change. It's just fundamental, right? And I think to some degree, this century we're in, this time we're in, seems to be a period where there is no responsibility and no reckoning happening. And so things are escalating. Violence is escalating. Oppression is escalating. Racism is escalating. Misogyny is escalating because there is no accountability.
The idea of accountability, of who holds people accountable, how we hold them accountable, what is appropriate, what is not appropriate. And these are all things that are difficult and also varying, right? I mean, your accountability for mm-hmm. something or my accountability for something may be very different.
That's true. That's true. But I think to just even be in the dialogue about accountability, right? To say this situation needs some form of reckoning, right? And to be able to gather people who are willing to look at history. I mean, I think there's some things that are undeniable givens. The history of we are all living on stolen lands, for example, right?
Right.
We know that the story of this country is based on genocide. It's based on land theft. It's based on the destruction of the people and their traditions and the indigenous people who were here. We have never reckoned with that story, right? We have never owned it. We've never talked about the consequences. We've never made reparations. We've never looked at how that has impacted us as all the people who came after, who are living on stolen lands, who have benefited from that genocide, right? The same thing is true of slavery, right? 400 years of people being enslaved in this country. And there has never been a reckoning with that. There has never been a full accountability and a full dive into it. And when it started to happen, the pushback against it was so and is so powerful that we're shutting down, you know, all the programs that were looking at the history, all the programs that were fighting for anti-racism. So we know that to reckon with the past is often threatening to people in the present because it means they may have to change the way they operate and the way they perceive their role and the role of their people in the past, right?
Absolutely. When you talk about as you talk about in the book, the narratives that we have that guide our life, narratives that you read about that guided your life, that talk about the importance of those narratives and the importance of changing those narratives.
Well, that's such a good question. You know, I think one of the things I'm very aware of since I wrote the apology, you know, I think anybody who's gone through any deep and powerful form of victimization where somebody has done something to you against your will or hurt you or invaded you or raped you or abused you because of your skin color or because of your sexuality or your gender or whatever it is, that victimization in a context of no reckoning or accountability often becomes an identity without you even choosing it, right? And for me, at any rate, I know that even when I was raging against my father, even all the years I've been fighting to end violence against all women and girls, even in my strength and empowerment in that fight, I was still inside my father's narrative, right? He was controlling the narrative, which was me raging against him, me fighting, you know, not to be his victim. When I wrote that book and I was able to have my father speak to me and say what I needed to hear and go through a process I needed him to go through, which showed me that he was taking responsibility for it, it changed something profoundly inside me. And I stepped out of my father's narrative. I stepped into my narrative, which is a very different narrative. It isn't a reactive narrative. It is, I'm no longer anyone's victim. I am my own independent, autonomous agent in this world. And I think so often when we don't have reckonings, we are forced to remain, where does injustice leave us? Right? It's a huge question. So many people are seeking justice. So many people are seeking apologies. So many people need to hear the words, I did this to you. It was wrong. Let me go into myself and see how I can grapple with this in a way that will make you feel I've understood it and you can release this. And, when I dedicated the apology, I dedicated it to all women who are waiting for an apology, which I imagine is most of us, right?
Right.
So I think when we break that, then we can step into a narrative that isn't living in reaction to, but is living in creation of.
As founder of both V-Day and 1 Billion Rising, those movements, those organizations, give us a sense of where they stand now and the work that's being done.
Well, you know, it's always with patriarchy. Patriarchy is like a virus, right? It seems to always be here, and when the conditions are ripe, it comes back in full form. So I think I could say we've made enormous strides over the last, 80 years. And right now we are in the greatest pushback against women's rights I've seen in my lifetime. And that goes for trans rights, that goes for non-binary rights, that goes for, we are seeing, let's just begin with abortion.
Right.
I mean, what is happening with abortion rights in America is utterly terrifying. And the fact that our bodies are now being controlled and the controls are getting deeper and deeper by men who know nothing about our bodies and have no right to our bodies is utterly shocking. But I also think we are seeing a pushback in this country, by the right wing, where they would love to see women back where we were in the 50s and in the 40s. And what we're seeing around the world is both. Like, if I look at 1 Billion Rising this year, and we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of risings all over the world, and our movement is alive, and it's ripe, and it's robust, and we are changing laws, and we're changing traditions, and we are breaking through taboos, and women are speaking truth to power. And at the same time, we see the most right-wing, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a global phenomenon right now, right? We see right-wing governments. We see Putin. We see Modi. We see Trump. We see, let's just go down the list of Italy, Hungary. We see this right, and whenever there is right-wing fascist regimes, simultaneously the women-hating and undermining of women's rights. So we have a lot to be fighting for right now, not to mention wars that are devastating women and children, for example, in Gaza, where we have 10,000 children and 45,000 people who are dead, 70% of which are women and children. We're seeing the same thing now in Congo. We're seeing that in Sudan. We're seeing wars everywhere where women are systematically being tortured, being raped, being murdered in extreme numbers. So, and not to mention, what COVID did. Because I talk about it in Reckoning, but I think that COVID was a very devastating period for women around the world. One, because women were locked in their houses and unable to go anywhere, and nobody thought, like, what will happen when women are locked in with their abusers? There was no support provided for them in any country that I can think of. So there was the rates of violence rose. Women had to leave the workforce to stay home to educate their children. So many women left the workforce. We see in Africa and all over the world how many girls were pulled out of school because there was no way they could go to school. So that educational process, which had been moving along, had a serious setback. So I think, you know, we're not even beginning to reckon with the impacts of COVID because for many places, COVID is still alive. I think we need here and everywhere now to really be understanding that when we're fighting for the earth, when we're fighting for women's rights, when we're fighting against genocide, when we're fighting against wars, these are all interdependent and seamless struggles that we have to join together because women are on the front lines of climate crisis. They're on the front lines of poverty. They're on the front lines of war. And we have to join our struggles and be in much deeper solidarity with them if we're really going to reverse things.
I'm interested in your thoughts on how we do that, as allies. Those of us who just look in horror at a situation in Arizona where, I mean, it's been repealed, but thinking that an 1864 law was a way to handle women's health care, what is happening in Florida with a six-week ban that will go before voters. But in the meantime, you still have women in the state of Florida having to travel at least 400 miles for health services. How do we become allies and make our voices heard on those issues that are so abhorrent to many of us?
Well, I think one way is to vote all these people out of office. And I really believe women will turn out in the elections. I think the Republicans have highly underestimated what women feel about abortion rights and their need to have control over their own bodies. So I think that's one. I think the other thing is for people to join existing organizations that are doing this work and have been doing this work and to really give themselves to that process, to get out the information, to find ways to support women who are going through not being able to get abortions, because there's lots of services now where people are finding ways to get people abortions, to get people pills, to get people over the borders, and to be a part of that. But the other thing is to just recognize that we have to fight for this. We can't lay back. We can't say it's okay. Because one of the things I've seen over my lifetime, which is, you know, I'm older now, is that once people begin to feel they can take away one right, they will come for the next, and they will come for the next. And that's exactly what we're seeing with abortion rights. You know, I was just working on a piece the other day, you know, based on a story about a woman who needed to get an abortion because the child, the baby, was essentially dying inside her. And they forced her to wait until 3 minutes, I think it's something like 3 minutes before you have sepsis and it's going to spread through your body, then they'll do something. But no one's in control of what sepsis can do to your body, right? And I think the fact that we value women so little and respect women so little that we would even consider something so medically insane and destructive to a woman's body, this is an indication of this kind of very profound misogyny and hatred of women that is being allowed. It's incrementally, but as it goes, it gathers more speed. So part of it is just standing up and speaking out and refusing it wherever you can and not normalizing it, because the normalization of it will allow the escalation of it.
The name of the new book is Reckoning. It is out in paperback from Bloomsbury. V, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure, as always, to speak to you.
Thank you, Joe. Really good to talk to you.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book by V is Reckoning. It is now out in paperback and published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.